Hello, and welcome to What Else You Do. I'm your host, Misal. I'm an indie producer in Montreal. And today, our guest is Astrid Rustrup.
Yes. Yeah, I'm Astrid and Astrid Refstrup, and thank you so much for pronouncing my last name perfect. I'm the co-founder of Triple Topping Games, an indie studio in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Typically, this podcast is about interviewing people, what they do outside of video games, but I decided that I'm going to do a mini-series where I'm going to actually talk about people and what they do while making video games. To give you a little bit of a backstory, there's been a few studios opening up locally in my space that were all white men. And there was a bit of a reaction from the internet being kind of disheartened by this, you know, saying like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's how this industry is. I wanted to produce a little bit of content to say that that's not always the case. So I went and found some people who run diverse studios and decided to talk to them. Astrid is our first guest regarding this subject. And yeah, so that's what this episode is going to be about. Tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get started in game development?
Yeah, actually before game development, I made underwear, like lingerie design, but I always wanted to like run my own business. I have always been intrigued by maybe directing movies, writing stories. Maybe I could, like, when I was a kid, I wanted to do Donald Duck comics when I grew up. And somehow all of these like thoughts led into me quitting the fashion industry and instead starting an education in game design in Denmark, which I wasn't able to finish in game design. I had to move to visual communication because being a woman, one of the only women in this study, made it an unsafe environment. So actually, my education is in visual communication and not game design. And after that, I founded a studio together with Simon Stålhanske, who's my co-founder of Triple Topping. Later, we had another partner join, Smurry Summerwolf.
So how many people were you when you founded the studio?
We were Simon and I, and we got an office space. And one of the first things we did was like, we made some rules for ourselves. It was like an handbook, an employee handbook, but it was just the two of us. We made our first game, and we got a few people to join us along the way for that. It was a platformer game about open relationships. So already there, we could feel that we wanted to make games that told stories about people you maybe don't hear so much about, especially in games. Also in early on, because we had this like game, the handbook, it evolved into what today is the Triple Topping handbook, which is like online our webpage. It says everything about like how we run the studio, how it is to be a team member of Triple Topping. We even have our contract online today. But it actually started just with like few rules on a dashboard, like show up at 9, go home at 5, remember to say hello, stuff like very, very small. But some rules that sort of focused on making a space where everybody could feel safe and included.
So how many years has it been since the founding?
We are 4.5 years old now, and we have released 2 games and published 1 game for another developer. So we released Bitkiss, Welcome to Elk, and together with Niflas, we also released Ynglet. And today we are 11 people. The last team member is starting in September.
Okay. And what does your studio makeup look like?
So there's 4 men. 2 of them are partners like Simon and Maria. And then there's 6 women and 1 person who's non-binary.
That's pretty good.
I still think we have some way to go. Like Denmark, everybody looks the same. And we have some really like a lot of restrictive rules in terms of immigrations and so on. So like everybody looks like me, basically. And so therefore, it's like so far only white people in Triple Topping. We have opened up to have remote people working to make it easier for people to access and work with us. But yeah, so there is like diversity, but I still think we could do better.
For sure. And I think something that really nailed home during the pandemic is how much you open yourself up to diverse candidates when you are open to remote hire.
Yeah.
As long as you're hiring locally, you are going to be limited to the local workforce and whatever that's available there.
And bringing people into Denmark is also not like, it's for an indie studio. It's not like, hey, I could hire someone from the other side of the world and it would be amazing to have them join us in Copenhagen if they were up for that. But that's just really tricky. There's also, of course, some rules about having contractors in other countries, but it definitely opens up a lot.
What are the rules for Danish laws in terms of having contractors in other countries?
So I would like that everybody have like the same pay in triple topping and have the same contract, basically the same rights. But I can go and make a contractor contract that looks like it's an employee, because then people can end up being double taxed. So there are some benefits I'm not able to give people outside of Denmark. And that's been one of the things we thought a lot about opening up. It's like we have one person from Norway and we have someone from Australia joining us soon. And it's like, okay, I can't give you exactly the same. Like I try to make it as close as possible. So that's some of the things. Having people moving into Denmark, give them like a specific salary, but also they would have to go through a very long immigration process. And I'm not sure with the size of our studio that we would have the capacity to actually like assist people the right way in doing this.
For sure. Immigration is an interesting conversation especially for smaller studios. I know I used to be in a large studio for a long time. So they had a whole department for that, you know, like
apartments and flights and everything, and what about your stuff, we're gonna ship it, it's fine.
If you have a larger studio that has multiple projects, you know, if one project's not a good fit, then there's going to be other opportunities, whereas with a smaller studio, that's much harder to absorb.
It's a big decision. There could be many reasons for an employment not working out on both sides, and it's just like, okay, now we moved all the way. Like there's other, of course, like game companies in Denmark, but it would be tricky.
And it could also be completely external factors as well. Like I know a lot of people who moved to Montreal to work and it wasn't the job that ended up sending them back. It's because either, you know, they have family members or their parents are getting old and then they want to leave them alone, you know, like maybe just the weather or the culture just didn't agree with them, you know, like all of these are factors that it's really hard to predict.
But it's like opening up and having like remote, it's definitely something that helps in terms of diversity. And then again, like you can actually, even though you're like an Indian startup, I think you can do quite a lot in terms of diversity. I really love when I'm reaching out to like studios in Denmark with like 40 men and 3 women and they're like, yeah, but it's so hard. We don't know what to do. Tell us. And they have like millions and millions. And I'm like, yeah, it's actually not hard.
At that point, I guess you have to ask them, so what have you tried?
What have you tried? Diversity event. That's it.
The problem is that if you are relying on conventional processes and conventional applicants, you are going to end up with a makeup that looks exactly like what the current industry looks like. And I think that's really one of the key factors. As a person who, you know, manages a studio and as, you know, that receives CVs and been hiring people for a long time, it's true. Like 90% of CVs that you do get are men.
Yeah. It's just because it makes up like a lot of the pool of like the industry.
Clearly, there is something that you need to actively do if that's not something that you want to continue to perpetuate.
I think what helped us in triple topping is just the fact that one of the founders were like not a man helps, because I think a lot of women and minorities, when they see this like wall of white men in many studios, you also know that this is a place that potentially can be unsafe for you. And like, I know it's hard to mention that, it's just because of like how people look on a team photo. But for many people, it is actually like, you never know how it is during lunch. And what about the beers on Fridays? Like, you know, as a woman that you can be potentially in an unsafe situation, and that goes for any minority. And therefore, if you see like, okay, one of the leaders of this company is also, I will not say like minority, but I am still a minority in the industry, then you just by that, feel more safe and feel that this is maybe a place where my situation would be understood and respected.
For sure. And I think considering the fact that people see so much horror stories on, you know, on the internet regarding having difficulty, you know, being taken seriously, mm-hmm. having unsafe work situations, and also having problems with progression because of, you know, their status as a minority. I think obviously if you see somebody in leadership that, you know, reflects what you look like or what you feel like, then that's definitely going to be inspiring for sure.
Yeah. I think that helped. Like, and of course it also helped us in triple topping too, because I experienced the discrimination. I'm also a victim of the game industry. That also helped us to like put the focus first of like, how can we make the studio a safe space and a place where everybody feels welcome to work. I think if it was like, of course, if it's just like two white men that have like never experienced like real harassment or never have tried like someone making them unsafe in the industry, there's just some things you don't think about. Because you were never presented with this issue, while I'm presented with the issue all the time. Now, when I'm a little bit more like established in the industry, and I start to have the privilege of being along for some time and having like founded a studio, working, I'm also working as an advisor to Carlo Knights and all of these things. Like the harassment or the situation where I'm unsafe are like fewer, but still I know exactly what it's about and I know exactly what discrimination feels like. So I'm always there, like, of course, like, people can also point it out to me, but I can also point it out in our studio. And I'm always, like, thinking about, like, how can we creatively make our studio a safe space? And it's in the small things sometimes, like, have tampons at the toilet so everybody who menstruates have that at office and don't have to worry about, like, oh, my God, what if I get my menstruation in the middle of workday and I need to excuse myself and go to a shop? And, like, all of that worry around, like, just it starts with all the small things, but you don't see that if you're not a person who menstruates, for example.
Actually, I did that.
That's really good.
There's this bar called Turbo House. All their bathrooms are single-star unisex bathrooms, and I went in there. And they had like tampons and pads. And I was like, oh, well, we should do that.
Yeah.
So I did.
Copy paste. Perfect.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, I think I agree with you 100%. Talking to my white coworkers, even the ones that are very well-meaning and they themselves are, you know, good coworkers and good allies, are just not aware of, you know, the kind of things that other people go through. Being a heterosexual male, generally speaking, and I'm also white passing, so I certainly have not had it the roughest. Mm. Even then, like, I've had very uncomfortable conversations and uncomfortable situations I would put in by either my superiors or people I worked with. And it was surprising to me how shocked people were when I told them, like, no, that's the reality for most people who are not the majority.
Listening is very difficult, but you should still listen. People should still listen in general, even though it's difficult. Because it's like, it's not only having empathy, but it's also having empathy where you no longer make any excuses for yourself. So if someone like this other day, we were at an event for women in Denmark, and at some point I spoke over another woman talking. She came up to me afterwards and said, like, hey, that's not okay. It made me feel uncomfortable. And it's like, when you are in that situation, you want to make like 100 and thousands of excuses of like, oh, I didn't mean to, and it was because of this, this, and that. And you really just have to like, yeah, okay, I was just an idiot. And thank you for telling me and pointing it out. And even with the small things, like this is like a very small thing, even there, it's just like, I think everybody just have this like defense mechanism. And then with people point out like, hey, that's not okay. You make this kind of joke. I'm a woman. It makes me feel like this. I'm a queer person. I'm a person of color. And it's like, it puts me in this situation. It's just so hard and just sit there and listen, but you just have to put yourself through it again and again and keep listening. It's so important.
For sure. I totally agree. Something that we discussed in our studio is, I think one of the things that makes like kind of these conversations about like race and gender dynamics difficult is that I think people seem to think that if you say like, oh, what you just told me hurt my feelings as a minority, you called somebody like a literal Nazi.
total. Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Like, people seem to think that it's like, it's very binary. You're either like not racist or you're a Nazi. And there's really like no middle ground. And I think that's part of the reason, like, a lot of these conversations are so difficult.
Yeah, it's like you don't want to be put in the box with the Nazis, of course. But I think you still have to acknowledge, for example, as a white person, as I am, that you grow up in a society where you learn racism from the way, like, from your childhood. And especially in Denmark, like, Denmark have colonized Greenland for years and years and years. And we always tell the heroic stories and how, like, we made everybody Christian. And now they're so much more happier and they couldn't do without our help. And it's almost like, you know, the white savior story. And no one is actually questioning that this is like a super racist situation we have, and that we all just like let this pass all the time. No one is really talking about it in the media. I know the Inuit, the people, the young people living there try to like get access to the Danish media and talk about it, but it's just like not interesting because we want to see ourselves as heroes. And that's the kind of society I think most Western people grew up in, that we are heroes. And with that goes racism too. And so we have to listen, we have to learn. It takes a long time.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's also important to create an environment where you can have the conversation kind of safely. Mm. One of the things that we wanted to emphasize at our studio is that when somebody points out, you know, what something you said was insensitive, that this is not supposed to be an attack. This is supposed to be a opportunity for you to learn.
Yeah.
And that ultimately that we're all, you know, hopefully you're in a work environment where everybody is trying to be a better person.
Yeah.
And I think communicating that, I think, is really important. You know, that this is not us trying to police each other. This is not us trying to like somehow catch each other doing something bad. It's a process in which we're all trying to improve, and that we're all trying to make the space safer for all of us.
That's really important. Like in triple topping, we have this thing that like everything that's said in the company stay in the company. That's one of the things in our handbook. And I think it's important that you know, like if you had to listen, if there was someone pointing something out, or if we have like discussion around these topics and everybody, like somebody maybe like ask a wrong question. And like also in our games, a lot around these subjects that like it stays here. It's a safe space. It's okay that you're not perfect all the time. And like, no one will talk about this other places. This is where we are together. And in general, make a space where people feel that they can like talk to both like the founders or whatever leaders that are in the company and say things out freely. It's very important. And you can do that in so many ways. Take away all the competition that usually are in a workplace, like negotiating for salary, for example, like, why not just be open about the salary? Everybody gets the same and no one has to be like, oh, am I good enough? I should maybe stay longer. Oh no, now I have kids. I have to go home. Now everybody, all the young people are staying. Then you feel guilty when you show up the next morning. Like all of these things put a lot of pressures on the colleagues and team members of the company. And if you remove that, I think it's easier for people to feel safe enough to like ask the right questions and point things out if someone is saying something that is hurtful.
I think that that's an excellent approach. Are there anything that you do when you're hiring that is beyond just posting your job and saying like, hey, like waiting for the CVs to come in? Like, how do you do diversity in hiring?
We've done it many ways and we talked a lot. It's usually Simon and I who did the hiring processes. I think the biggest thing is to be open about what is the company. Like on our Twitter, we even say it's a feminist company. So if you think feminism is bullshit, then don't apply.
Maybe not for you.
Maybe not for you. So we are very open about like what kind of workplace is this? And by that, some people will just simply not apply for a job and triple topping. Like we also don't serve alcohol. If alcohol is a big part of the way that you socialize with your colleagues, this is also maybe not a company for you. But if you are from a cultural background, if you maybe have experienced like abuse of alcohol and so on, then it's a safe space for you. So like being open about this makes that people are writing some of the honest job applications and they are so brave. Like they tell us honestly if they had like mental health problems, if they have experienced traumas in like a previous workplace and so on. And I'm so grateful that people trust us this much when they apply for a job in Triple Topping. But I also think that it shows that people actually already from the communication feel that they can be this themselves when they apply for a job. So that's the first thing we do. And then, of course, like last time, I think we got 200 candidates because we also put it online and we are very clear in the job posting, like, hey, no need for a long cover letter or no need to tell exactly who you are and stuff like that. Just like tell us why you want to be a part of Triple Topping. So like all of the formal corporate stuff you would normally put in a job posting, it's like scrap that. You actually can't use it anyway. So it's like people write like sweet cover letters like, hey, I'm this person. I would like to work at Triple Topping, like very short. And then they just like show a portfolio. And then when we are sort of reviewing, make sure that we actually just look at people's skill set and not who they are. And if we end up having only like the same type of candidates, like all white men, for example, we take another look and another look and another look and make sure that we interview more people. It is really difficult because in Denmark, and I think that goes for many countries, you are not allowed to advertise for specific people. Like you can't say like, hey, now we are too many men, so now we need somebody else. Like that's simply not allowed. That's discrimination. That is sadly therefore a benefit for the majority of the society. So it's like it's about open communication of what kind of workplace it is, and hopefully getting some different candidates applying for us, and then like being careful in the process of not like ruling people out too fast. So that's been our strategy so far. We have started sort of headhunting a little bit, being, okay, the next hire we need to do, it's this specific job role. Who pops up in our network? And then just like poking them. And I'm always debating with myself if that's the right strategy to go, handpicking people. It easily falls also in the category of like checkboxing in your diversity hire. And I also don't want to do that.
For sure.
So it's like,
and also if you're hiring within, yeah, if you're handpicking your applicants, it means that you're hiring within your network as well, which means that you're gonna end up with more people that are similar to you.
I think in the beginning of Triple Topping, like, okay, we are good at attracting women, but they were all out the same age, and they were all like these like funky young indie developers type, and then at one point, it's like, maybe we need someone who's like older than 30 years old. So that's also like something you have to think of, like, hey, it would be nice to have someone who is in the early 20s and someone who is like 40, 50, 60, 70. And
70, you might have a hard time. I haven't seen a whole lot of plus 70 game developers, but
if anybody applies, like, I will heavily look at the application.
Yeah, no, we have the same issue as well. So the co-founders in our studio were age, like, four out of the five co-founders were between the age of 35 and 40.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but also because we've all known each other for 10 years, and
yeah,
that's why we decided to found a company together. But you're going to attract people who are similar to you. You're going to, you know, as a smaller organization.
It is definitely, and we, like, I think today we talk more about politics again at the office, Simon and I, but at some point I was also aware, like I'm worried about the climate. I'm talking about queer communities. I'm talking about labor laws. I'm talking about maternity laws. And like, I'm very opinionated. And sometimes I'm like, maybe I should keep it down a little bit at the office. So if you like, maybe you don't really care about it, which is also fine for some of the subjects, but maybe you don't have exactly the same opinion, and I didn't want to create like a workspace where it feels like I have to have the same opinion as Astrid, because that's good. So that's the thing we have talked about a lot. Like, hey, how do we make sure that everybody feel that their opinion is welcome, also if they don't have the same opinion as someone like Astrid, who is very opinionated? Now I try to only talk about it in terms of like issues for like gender issues in Denmark and so on, because it's like firsthand experience. And I think staff also often see like what the struggle is as someone like being a female CEO of a game studio. That's definitely something we also thought about. You have to think the whole circle, and you can never do it perfect. But you can keep questioning yourself, and you can keep redesigning and listening to the people that you are working with, and then change based on that feedback. And it comes with putting like diversity first. When you see these studio of like 40 men lined up, I'm pretty sure they didn't put diversity first.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't think so.
Sometimes they're even right on the webpage that they're focused on diversity.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. Like, you know, maybe don't put that there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes they genuinely do believe that, like, they do care about diversity, you know? And I think that's the difficult thing. Like, people seem to think that, like, okay, so you either care about diversity or you hire people who are qualified. And they seem to think that, like, it's an either or, which is kind of crazy.
It is really crazy. And like, it's one of the arguments that I hear, like, hey, what do you do if someone is like, then not qualified, will you then still hire them? And it's like, there's more to qualification than have taken a certain exam or being really good at one specific thing. Like, when you're hiring someone, you hire them for a lot of reasons, and you can, like, people are able to learn.
Like, you can, it's true.
Oh, you haven't worked in this with this tool before. Let me teach you. Like, that's actually an option. You can educate people within your studio too.
Yeah, I think our industry, I think, looks at everything in a very extremely short time frame.
Yeah.
A lot of times, I think people are really worried about, like, are you going to be able to be effective like starting next week? And I think that's part of the reasons it makes it very difficult for us to be like, okay, well, are we willing to invest in a junior? Are we willing to invest in someone who doesn't, you know, hasn't shipped 5 games on this platform? I think that's how that sort of studio ends up happening. I don't think they're actively selecting, saying like, I mean, at least I hope not.
No, often I think they look at experience in it, like seniority in the industry and so on, which I think sometimes can also be a misunderstanding. Like, you could have been 15 years for in a specific company and have a lot of experience, but that doesn't mean you are like good at adapting to a new company, for example. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you are, but it's like, it's not all. And you can be a junior who's just like who's really excited about working with this specific game, for example, or this specific company. You're just getting their first job, and of course they will learn fast. People are not lazy. No, humans are not lazy. They want to do their best.
For sure.
And then of course you have to tell them to go home.
Yeah, I think that's generally the case with juniors, that more often than not you have to go home rather than they have to work harder.
But Murray, the partner in Triple Topping, joined, like, he came from freelancing before.
People who come from freelancing don't understand that they don't have to, like, try to, like, kill themselves on the job.
It was like starting his life over. Was like, yeah, I'm going home. He was like sitting there clinging to the keyboard. It's like, yeah, you go home. And in the end, of course, like, you learn it. You learn that it's like nothing is going to... actually, you're way more efficient if you just work shorter amount of hours. Mm-hmm. No one is like especially good after like 10 hours of work.
For sure.
It can be that you're maybe good at working at night, but if you work for 10, 12 hours, like, your brain is just going to be like mush, and no one is benefiting, especially not you. There's so many things that you can do to make a workplace more inclusive, and there is really no excuse.
Okay, so we've been going for a while, so I think it's time for us to wrap up. What is something that you want people to know about running a diverse studio or trying to strive for diversity?
Listen to the feedback people give you, and maybe you sometimes have a counter argument, but try to wait a few days before you give it, and let the feedback and advice that people are giving you sink in. You don't have to defend yourself. I think that's the most important thing.
Well, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.